You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, but before we get started, I wanted to tell you about an exciting opportunity for you and the leaders you know this fall, the Pipeline Conference. Our team, the Lifeway Leadership Team, is hosting Pipeline on October 13 in Nashville. And it's a conference unlike others you've probably been to because it's a training conference, an event that will show you and your church leadership team how to launch a leadership pipeline. You'll hear from speakers such as Tom Rayner, Eric Geiger, Kerry Newhoff, and Paul Tripp. We'll have plenary sessions interspersed with shorter, practical TED-style talks. We'll have Q&As with the speakers to clarify and apply what was said, and we'll also offer a second day built around coaching and implementation that will have limited seating. And we really want you to join us. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more and to register. Pricing is affordable, and we're offering an early bird discount through the end of July, so you want to move quickly. Again, go to myleadershippipeline.com for more information and to register. We look forward to seeing you there. Enjoy the podcast. Hey, and welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins.
What?
I'm always curious which version of what he is going to go with on any given episode.
What?
Todd, as you will remember from previous episodes, is the director of leadership here at Lifeway. So he oversees our efforts to assist churches in their leadership development.
Yes, I do.
Is what we do. So we do that a blog at lifeway.com/churchleaders, through webinars, through a free ebooklet you can find at lifeway.com/churchleaders.
Leadership pipeline.
Yes, developing your leadership pipeline. You wrote
something
it.
Like that.
You should remember the title.
Well, maybe.
We have a conference coming up in October at myleadershippipeline.com. You can find out more about that. So we have a variety of ways we do this, but churches are our focus. And today we are going to ask 5 leadership questions with Danny Franks, who's the Connections Pastor at the Summit Church in North Carolina. Danny has been a partner of ours in the leadership development team for really since we kind of got
since
started.
The beginning.
Since we launched Ministry Grid.
I can't remember what happened, but I just remember trying to recruit him and he turned me down. So
you decided just to be friends instead.
It wasn't you, it was me.
Oh, we just covered this. We just did the Leadership Pipeline webinar. We did the first installment, which was on volunteers. Danny keynoted that. Barnabas and I co-hosted that and answered some questions from you guys live. If you want to find that, you can go on to the Lifeway Leadership app or just go to our church leaders channel and search it.
That'll oh, yes. Thank you for mentioning the app. I forgot to mention that one. We did release an app not too long ago. Lifeway Leadership is the name of it. It will have our blog. It will have downloadable resources. It will have, you can actually stream our podcast through it. You can get the audio, some video training. There's a variety of things in that. So
No cat photos.
No cat videos.
Photos, GIFs, none of that.
No latte foam art pictures.
Nope.
None of that. Just leadership stuff. So
yep.
Right up your alley. Go get that app. It'll also send you push notifications of exciting new stuff we have coming up if you dig that sort of thing. As I was saying, though, we are with Danny, and we are not asking Danny our standard 5 questions, not because he's not worthy of it, but because we wanted to talk about one specific topic today, and that is guest services at a church. So before we do that, I do want to hear a little bit from Danny about who he is and what his role in ministry is and why you should pay any attention to what he has to say about guest services.
It's all about your blog because it is all about guest services and such and randomness. But
yes. Yeah, it's a lot of randomness, a little bit on
so
guest
just
services.
Just like this podcast, lots of randomness and a little bit of leadership.
That's right. So as you said, Barnabas, have been the Connections Pastor at the Summit in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina area for the last 13 years. Worn a few different hats, but the consistent one along the way has been that of Connections Pastor. And so in that role, oversee our guest services teams at our various campuses or the people who oversee those teams. And then also oversee our covenant membership processes and things along that line. So I've been at the Summit for 13 years. I have been married for 23 years to my high school sweetheart, Miriam, technically high school sweetheart. Met her January of senior year, so I think that counts.
That counts.
You were coasting to a finish, but you finished strong, it sounds like.
Exactly. I was going to finish my high school career single, but I decided to change that up a little bit. So,
and the rest of your life.
Yes. four kids. We've got our oldest son is 20. So three boys, 20, 18, and 13, and the little girl is five. She is the princess who runs the household. So we're constantly confused in our house with an age range like that. But that's a little bit about us. And Todd, to answer your question, I do blog. Dfranks.com is that guest services blog. And so write on that as frequently as I can, just to churches around who are trying to get a little bit better at that skill set.
So dfranks.com, listeners, go check that out. I'm just going to jump into our questions because we had let it off by saying we're going to talk about guest services. And I think the most important question is our first one, and that is, what exactly are guest services? Because I think most churches think in terms of greeters mm-hmm. or something, an information desk, but there's not sort of a comprehensive idea of a ministry's to guests.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. There is a there's sometimes guest services is one of those other duties as assigned in the local church. A lot of times it tends to gravitate towards something that is the foundation of the weekend experience. And so the way that you treat your guests is becomes something that is more like shock and awe. And people, you do it so that you can get people to come back as much as possible. But then on the other side of that is more of an afterthought where churches don't really think through it. They don't prioritize it. And I'm really not arguing for either side of that. I think there is a healthy middle to be found, and one where, yes, we honor our guests, but the reason that we honor our guests is not so that we can make much of ourselves as a church, but to make much of the gospel and to connect guests to a relationship with Jesus. And so for different churches, that's going to look like different things. And in our particular context, our guest services umbrella covers everything from the parking lot to the pew, the street to the seat, however you want to say that. So parking team, folks on the sidewalk, people at our first-time guest tent, mm-hmm. Folks at our Next Steps tables, seaters, whatever. All of that will function under that main umbrella. I think guest services is not just having a few people smiling at the door, handing out bulletins. You know, it's not right. Eight guys in a matching suits and sour dispositions.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was affirmation.
That was good. That was the amen.
That was actually a really good imitation of greeters at most churches.
Right.
Just
right.
A grunt.
Yeah. 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 I wasn't sure which syllable we were going with, but that was good. That was really helpful.
So, You mentioned sort of the two extremes, one being the shock and awe and the other being the afterthought, sort of throw somebody at a door and say, you know, open it and say hi to people coming in. Mm-hmm. What are some examples of what that looks like without throwing any particular churches under the bus? The latter category is pretty clear. We've all seen the sort of lame, like, oh yeah, we should probably have somebody who says hi when people come in. But that shock and awe thing, that sounds like more of a mindset. So can you describe a little bit of what goes into that?
Wow, what a minefield you're asking me to walk into.
Yep, go for it.
Yep.
It's all you.
So I think in those situations, you know, Mark Dever has a great quote that I love going back to over and over again, where he says that what you win people with is what you win people to. What you win them with is what you win them to. And so if you're basing everything on the weekend around an experience, then you've got to continue to meet or exceed that experience weekend after weekend. And certainly experience is important. I mean, the gospel deserves to be held in high esteem and to be communicated clearly and winsomely. We don't want to have lackluster ministries. We don't want to have things that we're just doing halfway. But at the same time, I think where we can fall into danger, and certainly not saying that any church out there does, but where we can fall into danger, hypothetically speaking, is that we can put so much emphasis on the experience that we forget what the experience is supposed to represent and connect to.
Right.
So guest services,
it becomes an end in itself.
It does, and guest services has got to be something that leads towards something else. So that is for us a huge part of the way that we do that ministry.
Well, that really sets up the why question really well. So why is guest services so important?
Yeah, I think one of the sayings that we communicate to our volunteer teams a lot is that the gospel is offensive, but nothing else should be. And so if a pastor at a local church is going to be preaching the way that the gospel is intended to be preached and communicated, you know, in our society, there are just a lot of things that are patently offensive about the gospel. Mm-hmm. Yes. And as believers, we forget that. We live in our little Christian bubble, and we forget just how countercultural the message of the gospel really is, that you are a sinner that is separated from God. There is nothing that you can do to save yourself, to clean yourself up. And there was one man who lived 2,000 years ago, who is the Son of God, who died on a cross, rose again, and if you trust in him, your sins are covered, they're forgiven. And to Christians, that makes plenty of sense. But to people who are on the outside, I mean, the scripture says about itself that the gospel, the word of the cross, is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those of us who are being saved, it's the power of God. And so we have to keep that in mind, and we have to keep that as a tension that we manage. And so what that means when we say that the gospel is offensive but nothing else should be, we really want to just clear the pathway for our pastor to be able to preach and to preach unhindered, but at the same time recognizing that while what he is preaching on or about may rub some people the wrong way, they could walk away from there saying, you know, I may not agree with everything those people teach or believe, but I can't argue for a moment with the way that they made me feel.
Right.
And I think that's really important, because I think people are walking in with a perception or a preconceived notion about what they're going to experience from a counterculture in a bad way. And it's our job really to create the counterculture that really is a true expression.
There's the counterculture. There's the counterculture side. There's also the sort of traditional church culture side. So people who grew up in church have been away for a while. You know, that happens to a lot of people. They leave around college years. They get married. They have kids, and they're in their 30s, and they're like, "Oh, we should probably take our kids to church." They come back. They have expectations too, because they know what the stuffed suit church is like.
Absolutely.
And then there's the countercultural side that says, these are, you know, these are the crazy evangelicals, and so they have their expectations too, and it's overcoming both of those potential objections.
Yeah.
But how do you? I mean, don't you overcome both of those in the same way?
I think so, because you know the paradox that you're saying is that what makes those on the inside, so believers, you know, people who have been in church for years or decades, whatever, the things that bring us comfort tend to bring our guests discomfort. Our insider language, our, you know, traditions, our whatever. But the things that bring our guests comfort are the things that make us uncomfortable.
And they require stepping out a little bit.
Exactly. Yep. It requires getting out of your comfort zone. So somebody is going to be made to feel uncomfortable. And I think that the life of a believer and the generosity of a believer should be that, hey, if somebody's going to be made uncomfortable, let's let that be us. We will step outside of our comfort zones in order to bring someone closer to the cross. And so if that means, you know, very, very simple, practical things, if that means that we park a little bit farther away so that a guest gets a better seat, if that means that we don't have our territorial rights on our pews or whatever, little brass plaques with our grandmother's name on it or whatever, we want to do whatever it takes to make a guest feel like we expected them, we are glad that they came, and we hope that they come back again.
Yeah, I think that the term guest is key here, because I think that's become more common nomenclature in churches, but I don't think it's become a more common mindset. I think it really is, we still have a visitor mindset or a newcomer mindset, as opposed to, I mean, if you have a guest in your home, you do all of the work so that they can come in. They don't have to think about what's going to be served, where they should sit. Do they need to, they don't never have to ask for something to drink, any of that stuff. You serve them.
Right.
And
right.
If you have the guest mentality in church, you're serving, which means, like you said, that you're stepping out of your comfort zone, as opposed to making them ask, you know, where do the kids go?
Exactly.
Or what do I do next? Because if they're new to church, there's this whole cultural thing of, we have a sequence of events, we have an order of service. Mm-hmm. We all just know, we just go with the flow.
Yeah.
And they think it's the strangest, weirdest thing, and they're not really sure. But if they're guests, you bring them along with you and you explain, or you make them feel welcome.
Exactly. And that comes down to thinking through the experience before they even arrive. So putting yourself in their context, in their shoes, and remembering the questions that you would have as someone who's showing up new for the first time. And we can, you know, we can talk about that in the realm of church world, but even when we go to a new place, if we go to a new restaurant or a new shopping center or whatever, if we think through the uneasiness that we feel, multiply that by about 100, and you get what somebody feels when they're walking back into church for the first time in years, or for the first time in their life.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would think that a lot of people listening to this may have hopefully were changing their mind, but prior to this thought, well, can't anybody do guest services? Can't anybody hand out a bulletin or stand at a door? I mean, all you have to do is smile, right? I mean, but what you're saying is these people are really setting the stage. They're the thermostat that's setting the temperature, the environment that people are walking into. They're really setting the table for what happens in the service. Like, so what's important, or just can anybody serve?
Yeah. What's funny is when you ask that question, I think everybody listening to this podcast immediately got the face in their mind of somebody from the church that they grew up in, or the church where they are now, and are able to answer that and say, no, not everybody, at least not that guy. Because I think, you know, we do tend to see guest services as something that anybody can do, and so it doesn't take any skill and throw them out there. Well, that's obviously not true. And so you need people who are good with people. You need people who are able to make other people feel welcome. And people who are able to keep that bigger picture in mind, that this is not just about us being friendly. This is about us taking very intentional steps with people to help them move from being on the outside to being on the inside. And that's not just about being on the inside of a church,
right,
and connecting them to your church. That's about connecting them with a relationship of the life-changing power of Jesus. And if we're able to do that, then that's kind of our role. But if people are remaining insider focused, if people are just acting like this is a toil and a task that they're performing, right, something they're checking off of their box every week, then they're probably not somebody that's going to be the best.
So you're saying that I need more than a stack of bulletins and a pocket full of Werther's original?
Yes. If you could go with like the old
root
school,
beer barrels.
Yeah. Root beer barrels, butterscotch mints, whatever. I'm partial to the butterscotch mints. But I think that it does take more than just, you know, the kindly older gentleman that is, you know, all the kids know because he's got a pocket full of candy.
And there's, I mean, we would obviously want that person to serve.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
But it takes a little more than that.
And exactly. And that person may have the gifts that it takes, because what we're talking about in a lot of ways, it seems like, is sort of a gift of hospitality.
Right.
And there's a sort of a servanthood idea where you see somebody who looks lost, uncomfortable, new, and you do the things that it takes to make them feel welcome. And that's more than a bulletin and a Werther's. I mean, that's showing them around. That's answering questions. That's finding out about them as people.
Exactly.
I'll say this too. Danny actually does the guest services pathway on Ministry Grid. And if you see where he starts, it's the theology of serving.
Yeah.
It is really a hardcore why. So while that gentleman may be a good greeter,
mm-hmm,
he could be a extraordinarily impactful, joy-filled person if he knows even more the why behind that. You just put a force multiplier behind
it. Yeah, you kind of unleash a little bit as opposed to... And I do think that leads into our fourth question. So we've asked, what are guest services? Why are they so important? Who can do it, or who should do it? And lastly, we turn to, how do you take an inwardly focused church and turn them towards being aware of guests, that guest awareness instead of just sort of going into our little insular thing and going about our business. So how do we light a fire under the person who has what it takes but doesn't know what to do?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there may be churches that are listening to this right now that they're thinking, well, guest services is great, but we haven't had a guest in our church in years. And that's, I mean, sadly, that is the case for many, many churches. But I think that you begin, you know, to quote everybody's favorite Mormon, to begin with the end in mind and to figure out what—
Who is everybody's favorite?
Stephen Covey. He's everybody's favorite. They love that guy. But to begin with the end in mind and—
So much.
I thought it was Mitt Romney.
Well, it depends on the political cycle that we're in, I guess.
I'm ducking. I'm ducking the Twitter hate.
Didn't we say something about editing? So, but no, I think many times, you know, we just sort of assume the hand that we've been dealt, and we're like, well, we're not really a church that's going to grow by a lot or whatever. And I just think that doesn't speak very well of the larger, broader missional gospel that we have been given. And so very practically, if you're a church that hasn't seen a lot of new people come in lately, I think you begin to work towards that by taking some very practical steps of just beginning to build a team, beginning to talk as if guests are in the room. So if you're a pastor and you don't have guests, if you talk like they're there, eventually they may just be there because you begin to raise that awareness factor with your congregation. I think having a specifically assigned team that is their role. That's something they do just like you would have a team serving in kids ministry or whatever. You would have those people that is their function. And then I think other things like signage or very, very visible places for guests to go when they arrive so they know before they even walk in the door what it is that they're supposed to do. To your website. I mean, there's all kinds of small things that we can do. Some may cost a little money. Some are completely free that helps us to raise that temperature on our church campus and to help people recognize that this is part of our mission. We are not here simply just to take care of ourselves and to navel gaze from now until Jesus comes back. Our mission is to reach people. Mm-hmm. And so many times we relegate that to our once a year mission trip down to Central America. And while that is incredibly important, we've got people across the street that also need to know Jesus.
And I would say too, I would think that we've all been to churches where we would say, not every Sunday I've been comfortable thinking, I wish my friend would have been here with me, or I wish my neighbor would have been here with me.
Right.
So one of the things I think that you need to do is, as you said, prepare for guests, because there may be people sitting out in your congregation that once they see a consistency mm-hmm. in the quality of friendliness and the quality of the service, then they're ready to invite their friends.
And that's a really good point, because I have been in a church situation multiple times where I thought, I'm not sure I would want to bring my friend to this church.
Well, I understand it. Like I get it.
They would feel so awkward. We do not do the things to make somebody who's unchurched, dechurched, anti-church feel yep. welcome. For, you know, they can show up with however they need, sort of a come as you are, make them feel at home. And I'm just like, they need to hear this sermon, but I don't want them in this room.
Yep.
Because they would feel so awkward.
Why don't you download this one this week and just listen to
that online? We send you a link and you can listen in your car.
Right. You do, if you are creating that guest awareness culture, just as you said, it gives people that desire to bring other people along to be a part of what's going on there. But that means you've got to take a hard look at everything mm-hmm. that you do. That means yep. that just as you're trying to build culture, if you're trying to birth something, sometimes that means other things have to die. And you've got to get rid of things that are, that while they may be comfortable to you, they are toxic to the community, or at least are perceived that way. And that is not something that you walk into lightly. Oh, I got plenty of examples, none which are fit for broadcast. So,
come on.
Yeah.
There's got to be one fit for breakfast.
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to just decide who I'm going to offend without naming any names. One of my... This is so hard. I remember once being at a church where there was a whiteboard in the hallway that every single person walked by, and it was a list of all of the things that were broken around the church that needed to be fixed. And anybody could add something, and as the jobs were finished, you marked it off. And so it's like, yeah, this is a great, really friendly place. It's just full of asbestos and broken things. And so it was that was a little uncomfortable. There's a lot more things that I would probably get.
What I perceive to be the thought behind that was they wanted them to own the church. I mean, they wanted them to own their church. And I totally get that.
Yeah.
But probably not good placement.
Yeah. Whiteboard's not a bad idea. Maybe behind two or three sets of doors, it would have been better.
Somewhere in the office, maybe.
Right.
Now, I think in terms of things that need to change at churches, a lot of times it's the stuff that, I mean, you said take a close look, Danny, and that's because most of the time we overlook this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what sort of artwork is on the walls?
Right.
What service elements do we have that to an outsider seem like just strange and cultish?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, it can be any number of things that you look at and you go, this is something that we have become accustomed to that is really not helpful, and it's not essential.
Yes.
So you're not removing the singing of worship songs because that makes people uncomfortable, but you might remove different aspects of the service because that's something that's not even essential. It's just a thing that we did, but it makes people really ill at ease.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really takes that honest humility to be able to look at things and say what are still present because we're comfortable, and what's still present because, as you said, they're necessary. They're part of our weekly gathering.
We've always done
it
this way.
Yeah.
Versus,
and I think that means that we have to come in with the mindset of a guest.
Are there any more like quick things that you can shift almost immediately, or practical things that you can point to? Like, you know, should you have guests stand up?
Oh my gosh.
And things like
Please don't ever have, don't have your guests stand up. Don't have your guests stand up. Don't have your guests. I've seen this happen before where your guests remain seated and everybody around you stands up so that you're, you know, nose to belly button with 100 other people.
That's a height question as well.
Yes.
It can be quite awkward.
Exactly. And when I say speak to your guests from the platform, that doesn't mean calling them out. That means addressing them as if they're there. And if they are, they're addressing them very
generically. It's one thing to say if you're here for the first time, we are so glad you're here.
Right.
Here's the thing to do right after the service where, you know, we've got something, you know, a way to make you feel welcome, as opposed to could you raise your hand and we'll get a card in your hand or something.
And I think that is so key. If you're talking about changing the culture, what you want to do is to provide very easily identifiable next steps, understanding that not everybody is going to take a next step the very first time that they're there with you. There's a lot of people that want to remain anonymous for a while, and that's okay. We should let them be comfortable doing that, not feel like we're going to call them out or embarrass them in any way. But as many on-ramps as you can provide and describe for people to take a step, it's there when they're ready. And so I think providing those is important, but letting people get there when they're ready to get there is also important.
So you've talked about practical. We've talked about the practical pieces of, hey, these are some things that you shouldn't do. Mm-hmm. But what are the practical ways that you recruit, develop, and train, recruit, develop, and keep around?
And retain.
Yeah.
Good guest services volunteers.
Yeah. It is really difficult because if you have a culture where guest services is considered an add-on ministry, or it's something that people do once they finish teaching their Sunday school class or whatever, then it's never gonna rise to the level and the quality that you want it to. And so I think, I mean, you know, it just goes back to the whole thing. You can't over communicate that vision strongly enough. And earlier you mentioned that so many times we're kind of training for the what, but we forget to train for the why. Actually, in our training, at least for the first portion of that, we don't teach anybody how to park a car or how to open a door, because if you don't know that, I may not be able to do much for you. But what we do is we make sure that they understand why they're doing those things. We don't want someone to follow a checklist blindly. We don't want somebody to have military precision in the way that they greet people on the weekend but have no joy behind why they're doing it. And so we really try to connect those dots as often as we possibly can and take them back to that primary plumb line that we use, that the gospel's offensive but nothing else should should be. And so with that in mind, what are all of these different potential offenses that we can have that we need to eliminate before a guest ever shows up? And when we do that, that's when that culture begins to change. Now, to the retention question, to retain a volunteer in any ministry, guest services, kids ministry, whatever, they need to feel like they are a part of that grander vision and mission. And so they need to understand why they're doing it. They also need to understand what they're doing. I think that goes back to some of the things that we've been talking about with providing continual training for them at different levels of their leadership and all of that. I know that I'm biased because this is a ministry that I oversee, but I don't think that a good guest services team should be a stepping stone to anything. I think some of the best leaders in your church ought to be serving in that area because they're serving in such a key place for people to be introduced to the gospel. And so I think that you plan for that, and you're going after the best people that can really carry those conversations.
And I think that's a key mindset because it fits with what we have talked about so many times about the leadership pipeline concept, in that the goal is not necessarily to progress people to the next level. It's to land people at the right level. And so somebody that may be exactly the right spot for somebody to serve in the church. And if it is part of the larger vision, it's not a menial task. Right. It is an act of service. They're doing service equal to the guitar player leading worship or the person teaching children's Sunday school or any other area of service in the church. So it has to be seen that way, or it will be natural to either want to progress or want to quit, because nobody likes menial tasks for long.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And if all we're doing is asking them to stand in one spot and to hold a door, nobody aspires to that. I mean, nobody that has zero vision.
Yeah,
no leader is going to serve there long term. Unless they feel like they're obligated to fill a spot.
Right, right. But they're doing it because they're guilted into doing it, not because they get to do it. Right.
So what are some of the methods you guys use to train guest services people? And I mean, just talk through your training process.
Yeah.
A real practical.
Yeah, just on a very, very practical level, our initial training for guest services volunteers takes place over a 2-week period. The first week is a 1-hour training that really is all about just setting a massive vision for people. So we talk a lot about just different stories and different things, and we go through those different plumb lines, one of which I talked about a little bit earlier. And we really do try to help people see the role that they are playing in someone's eternity and help them to be able to gain a vision for that. At the end of that training, there's zero obligation when they show up. They can come and listen, and if they decide they hate the idea of making people feel welcome, they can walk away, no questions asked. But most of them opt to come back for a second weekend where they are getting some more practical on the job training. So we'll let them tell us, that they think they would like to serve on the parking team or the seating team or wherever it is, and we'll match them up with a team leader, and that team leader will just kind of let them shadow them for the morning to see on a practical standpoint what they do and how they do it. And so it is we want to give them not only the aptitude for the task, but we want to teach them kind of the touch part of it as well, and how that falls in. And then just on an ongoing basis, we do various things. I think bluntly, we do a really good job training our team members initially. We do a pretty good job with our high level leaders and so people who are kind of directing, some of these ministries and some of these teams. There's that mushy middle that we're still trying to figure out, and we certainly are not there yet. But just trying to figure out, how do we offer very practical ongoing training for people? And what I mean by that, I'm not talking about bringing somebody in every single week for a 30-minute meeting or whatever. It can be 5 minutes and a quick update on this is something different that we're doing that you need to know about, or whatever. It can be going back to some of that initial training and just helping them remember those things again. And we do that in various degrees. But the best, you know, the best training is that training that reinforces what they already know. Unless they're moving up a level in their leadership where they need new skills, it's just continuing to remind them of the why over and over and over again. You do that in multiple different ways, but just keep pushing them back to this is why you're here.
Just calling them deeper into that why.
Right, right.
So one last question, and this is not one of the five. This is just it just came to mind. You mentioned a couple different times being on the seating team. So taking somebody, helping them find a seat, you know, kind of ushering them to their seat, welcoming to their. That just made me think, how essential is it to have a congregational guest service mindset? So you have a team who is doing tasks, but once somebody is ushered to a seat, they are no longer being influenced by the guest service team. They're in the midst of the congregation. So how important is it for the congregation to have that guest service mindset to support the team that's trying to onboard people into the, you know, the church experience?
And how do you do that?
Yeah. Well, if we can answer that, we can
problem
all
solved.
Retire. Yeah. I think that's a really good point because, you know, I certainly don't want to paint it like we have got all this figured out and it's all, you know, roses and no thorns, because one of the common pieces of feedback that we get from our guests is that all of the official people, in other words, everybody who is wearing a lanyard or a name tag or whatever, super friendly, spoke to us, knew where I was supposed to go. I was not confused, you know, all of that. But once I got past that initial gauntlet, nobody spoke to me. And so it is that constant challenge of raising just that organic hospitality piece of things and helping people understand.
And in a large church, that's more difficult just because it's hard to be aware of so many things.
Exactly. In a large church, it's super difficult because everybody's afraid that they're going to introduce themselves to somebody that they've already introduced themselves to four or five times before. you know, they don't know if that person is really new or if they're, you know, been around forever or whatever. And I struggle with that. I'm on staff and I struggle with that. Right. So it's just more about helping ourselves, all of us, starting with leaders and working our way down, making sure that we are modeling what it looks like just to talk to other people, just to look up from our phones every once in a while and help people understand that this is, you know, this is a part of being the body on the weekend. And if you don't know somebody, introduce yourself to somebody. That's easier said than done if people are more tended towards, you know, being an introvert. But it's still something that I think is worth it if, you know, you never know where someone is coming from who's sitting just two spaces down from you on the pew. And the conversation that you have for them may be the linchpin that helps them take another step towards a relationship with Christ.
And that being said, that does not mean that churches should do the whole pause in the middle of the service and say, greet your neighbors.
Oh,
because,
please no.
Because that's the quickest way to take something that could be friendly and turn it awkward.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what always happens, first of all, as a germaphobe, I just can't believe that we're still doing that.
You elbow bump people
yes,
or something.
Yes, exactly. Hey, side hug. But whenever, you know, whenever we do that, we've seen it happen. We go to the same seven people over and over again.
It's because everybody has their name plaque on the pew.
That's so we all sit we in know the same exactly. Place. Yeah, we know where they are according to the seating chart.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, listeners, we hope that was beneficial to you, either for you and where you're serving in church right now, the mindset that you have. This is something that whether you're on staff at a church or just attending a church, you can bring this mindset in because you can begin to be guest oriented and have some influence in your circle, even if it's just six seats around you or at the front doors. So this can be beneficial for you regardless. If you're in church leadership, this can be a culture shift for you. So either way, implement it in your church. Start with this mindset. Start thinking about the why and helping people become guests who are there to meet something more significant than just a worship experience or the sort of the insular church thing. We appreciate you joining us, as you always do. Danny, thanks so much for being on with us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate that.
Very good to have you. Please come back. Please come back more often and enjoy Nash Vegas.
Oh,
and hot chicken.
Always do.
And
yes.
Hot chicken.
Amen.
All right. And listeners, thanks again. We appreciate you joining us. Jump on iTunes. Leave us a rating and review. We ask for that on occasion. You only need to do it once. Tune in next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. As you go, don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our upcoming Pipeline Conference. It will be on October 13th in Nashville, Tennessee, and early bird pricing runs through July, so move quickly to register. Again, that website is myleadershippipeline.com. We look forward to seeing you there.